Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guest to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Hello and welcome back to Mission Accepted Podcast. You would have just heard what the show is all about, and it is about people that take a mission. And predominantly, I know that my audience, because I get to talk to you and meet you often, especially when I show up live in places, and there's no better. I'm sure that Bill's going to agree with me when we start chatting. There's no better when you get to meet people in person that you're being inspired by or they're being inspired by you, and you get to have that, you know, that handshake, that meeting, that hello, that conversation, getting to know people better, which is really one of the topics that we're going to talk about, is about making people better today. Feeling better, living better, having access to betterment is so important. And as an audience, you know what? My audience today, you that are listening, you are just the most caring audience. How's that? You're like, okay, I know what we're talking about today. If you've been hanging around long enough, you know, you too get to get leaned in on what we're going to share today. So I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Bill Cohen online, as many of us were doing, and we were meeting new people from all over the world. And we kind of came together on the beliefs that we had around health and wellness and making people better. And look, at a lot of you I know are entrepreneurs and you're doing things and you're on mission and you're caring for yourself and you're caring for your business and you're caring for people in your life. And there's a whole game around caring on self and others and the balance of that and what you do and when you do it. But I always see people in the health and wellness sector as kind of like servant leaders, because predominantly when you're teaching someone to take care of themselves or you're giving advice that makes their life better, there is what we call the domino effect, the ripple effect, the whatever it is that you're doing, and other people benefit. And that's that whole philosophy around betterment. So me and Bill were chatting, and as you've heard me talk before, I kind of have this, you know, there's a couple of organs in the body, one being, you know, the lymphatic system, one being the skin and the brain, that I absolutely love. And he was sharing some really incredible statistics and sharing a story about his life and how he learned more about the brain and what that was all about. And then, like most, I don't know, how do you want to call it? I don't know if you want to, brave, courageous entrepreneurs, but they had a personal experience and they turned it into their mission. And so that's what I just love about this man. And we get to meet him in person soon enough as he comes over to the Canadian, to the world of Canada. So with no further ado, let me give you a title that you may not have heard before. It's not my title, it's his title, but I'm loving this. We just shared earlier, and I know that he is a caregiving support consultant, and that's something that I've known Bill to do. But I loved this, and I love to see when people's businesses start to merge and grow with the needs of community. And he is also a trained elder mediator, and we're going to dig a little bit into that. So Bill, welcome to Mission Accepted today.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that. French. I call it when I get to meet someone like yourself, and it's not someone I met in business, it's turned into a biz ship, you know, friendship, biz ship, put it together. Yeah. All right. Never mind my little fun part. So look, I just kind of been, go ahead.
That's what makes you, you.
That's what makes me, me. I just introduced you, as a caregiver, mediator, elder. What do you do and how did this come into your life?
So interestingly, tomorrow is the anniversary of a date that changed my life, my family's life. My mother was living in Biloxi, Mississippi, of all places. I'm not from there. I live in the Portland, Oregon area. I'm originally from New England. And she was showing signs of concern. And we thought, was she just getting tired? Was she getting older, stressed out, taking care of my late stepfather? But what happened 19 years ago, tomorrow, on the Gulf Coast, Hurricane Katrina. Their home was completely swept away in the storm surge. It was that bad. Fortunately, they had evacuated safely. But she came back to that house expecting it to be there, and the trauma just exacerbated, accelerated whatever was going on with her. Make a long story short, she was on the East Coast with other family members. I started attending a support group, getting counseling, talking to a care community. I moved her out here to Portland after a bit, and I was her primary caregiver. But she was in a very wonderful care community, faith-based nonprofit, for about 5 years, four of which were memory care. And she passed away 11 years ago this past February at age 83. Now, that support group, I kept going for a little bit. I became the facilitator. I got involved with fundraising, the Walk to End Alzheimer's, and going to the Capitol and raising funds to get more research funds to find a cure, which we're still working on. But as I was working at a completely unrelated government job, and I thought as I approached retirement that, oh, I'll just do more volunteer work. But I came across this concept of caregiving support consultant. And the really short version of all of that is I turned my pain, my loss into my passion, and what some people refer to as an encore career. What you really want to do, what's fulfilling, what's gratifying to you. And it's all in my mom's memory and honor. So what I do is I provide advice, support, resources, referrals to family caregivers so they can not only take care of their loved one, manage the care, but, and we'll talk about this in a moment, self-care, prevention, right? That's very important. And I put together the care team and the care plan so the caregiver doesn't feel so alone, overwhelmed, isolated, stressed out, losing sleep. I try to help them sleep better at night.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's a lot, right? That's not only are you dealing with family a member by nature, which has its own, bag of marbles, I would say. There's dynamics, there's relationships. You're not just dealing with someone who's a client, or there isn't history with, which can be beneficial and I would imagine sometimes challenging, right? I've heard over and over again how the parent doesn't want to take advice from their child when that role is now starting to be reversed, right? Can you tell us some of those nuances that happen that are maybe unexpected or make people feel like, am I the only person that has a mother or father that doesn't want to take some good advice? Do you know what I mean?
It happens a lot because in most cases they've been independent. They've been taking care of themselves. The rest of the family goes about their own lives and they may be spread out all over. Part of the problem is that you may not realize that until maybe you visit them for the holidays and suddenly you see reasons for concern. And oh, mom, dad, we need to take some steps. We need to do this. I'm going to come and take over. But well, they're going to get resistant. Oh, we're fine. We're okay. We don't need any help. And they may not be able to see the forest for the trees. They may be in denial themselves because of their declining health. So what I try to do is help family members start talking about it, come together. They may not all agree on every little nuance, but at least get on the same page as far as taking care of your family member who's aging and may not be able to take care of themselves, let alone make their own decisions.
Now, I have to say, is that where the mediator part of your services come into play? Are you mediating for one side or are you meeting within the family? Like, what does that mean?
Well, since you brought up a legal aspect, I'll use a legal term. Depends. And actually, I'm going to use the line that you told me a while back. Some families can't decide on ordering pizza for dinner, let alone how, where, why, et cetera, to take care of their loved one. So the problem is that not everybody is always on the same page, and they may be spread out. And they'll have excuses. I'm too far away. I'm too busy. I can't deal with it. I have a bad relationship with mom, dad, whoever. But everybody can help in some way. And if they do, even if it's a small piece of the puzzle, they're a caregiver. They're part of the caregiving team. But what I try to do is communicate and talk about the various issues as an elder mediator. Not everybody's going to get what they want. but to try to get to an agreement they all can live with, right? And it keeps it out of the courts, keeps it away from the lawyers. It's private. And the big key is making sure everybody keeps talking till they can come to an agreement that's in the best interest of their loved one.
Wow. As you say that, so I'm sure lots of bells and whistles, and I think that's very much the case, right? Where some people are going to take on more responsibility than others, or some can participate financially, some can't, and all that. I love how you say no matter what, at what degree people participate in, they are still part of the caregiving team. I'm sure that's very relieving for most. And so they go through that process. And I would imagine that they would need support through the whole process. You know, I imagine that maybe things change, or things change in people's lives, and just having that kind of support. Also, I imagine it would be quite beneficial to have someone who's not attached emotionally to, you know, when they, you know, to the issues that may happen emotionally in a family dynamic.
In an objective, neutral third party.
Right. Exactly. And an educator.
You don't make the decision for them. Right. They have to come to it themselves. And the other aspect that I mentioned to them, I'm not a therapist, although I kind of act like one sometimes. I can't fix your family problems. I can't fix your family dynamics. Now, I can give you a quick example where my family, even though I kind of played the peacemaker role at times in my family, I was fortunate that my, especially two aunts, had a lot of opinions, but they always had my mom's best interests at heart. And they also knew my name was on the paper on the power of durable power of attorney. And I also had mom's best interests at heart. I would listen and say, okay, I'm going to take that in. And then I will decide what I think was the best for my mother, Sheila.
Very good. No, very good. I'm sure it gets interesting. So there's more. I mean, you said it earlier when you said a lot of times people don't realize that there might be a problem until there's a family visit or an extended conversation, or they're noticing that on each time that they talk, there's a little bit something different, or there's a continued conversation that's not going in a direction like, well, I thought maybe she was forgetting things because she was stressed, or I thought, you know, the whole birthday. I mean, who remembers phone numbers anymore? We're all attached to these phones that have our, so, you know, what's the line and what's not. But I would ask you, is there a movement? Is it just us in the health and wellness field that are hearing more and more about Alzheimer's or dementia, or like what's going on in your industry?
That's a really good question, because I think there is an increasing awareness of the general public, not just people in the healthcare profession. I don't like to get obsessed about celebrities, but we can think about many people we've heard in recent years, Glenn Campbell, Tony Bennett. I mean, if people saw that concert with Lady Gaga that he did when he had Alzheimer's, he didn't remember what he had for breakfast, but that piano player started playing. It was Tony Bennett from 30 years ago. He was not. But that raises awareness that or movies like Still Alice or The Father with Anthony Hopkins. I think that helps people realize, oh, this is something to be concerned about. I'm wondering about so-and-so in the family. So it's a matter, and that's what I try to do. It's not just actually helping individuals. I think, you know, from my social media, my blog, et cetera, being on podcasts like this, is to raise that awareness about the things you should be doing first, like make sure they're safe. Two, make sure the legal documents are in place. Have those conversations about how are we going to take care of them, have a plan A, B, C, because there's a lot of what ifs in there. So every case is a little bit different.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if there was kind of some advice that you can have, whether it's because, as in the world of health and wellness, preventative is better than corrective. And at what point do you start having those conversations? And are people having those conversations with people in their life before there's ever even any signs? Like, look, this is a possibility. You know, there's a percentage of the world that comes up against this challenge. Like, when and where are those conversations to be had?
Well, as soon as possible, you see some signs, and it could be as simple as the place is messy. Mom's not making recipes the way she used to. They're not taking care of the finances properly. They're repeating questions. They come into a room and don't know why they came in there. Now, the
Mm-hmm.
difference is that they may not, we may not remember why we went in there, but we remember what the room is for.
Okay,
Just
very
like
good.
your cell phone or your glasses or your keys to your car, right? We remember what they are for. We all lose things because we're also busy.
No, good point. Good point.
But it's a matter of if you have a family history, that's going to be a factor. Just that somebody is getting into their 70s and 80s, the risk levels are higher. But I should mention that, and my mom was like the poster child, that it's not just genetics and age. Those definitely are risk factors, but it's also your environment and your behavior, your lifestyle choices. And I could talk about those.
Yeah, let's talk about a bit, you know, because if it's not an issue, it may be. And here's the other thing. I don't think it's ever too late to change your lifestyle choices.
Right. Because if you take steps right away when there's some concern or there are some symptoms, some behaviors that are changing, the sooner that you take action on getting enough sleep, good nutrition, keeping physically active, socially active, mentally active, doing puzzles and things like that, it's going to help slow the progression and maintain a good quality of life as soon as possible. And I didn't even mention eating crap, which is an acronym for like the carbonated sodas, the added sugars, the processed and artificial foods. Or I don't know if you've heard this being up Europe and Canada, you may have the acronym SAD, Standard American Diet.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So standard North American diet would get almost there, right? So,
well,
but people eating like that, if they start eating more healthy, something like a Mediterranean style regimen or diet is in their best interest, and that will help people long term. Again, my mom wasn't that old. Nobody else in the family has Alzheimer's, maybe a little mild cognitive impairment, like 89 and 90, that type of thing. But mom was living on that Gulf Coast with all the toxin pollutions and chemicals. She used to smoke. She didn't exercise. She was socially isolated. She was in the caregiver role. And as you know, she was an intaglio printmaker, an artist, etching into metal plates and putting it into an acid bath for about 30 years. Now, which thing, if any, or combination, we don't know. But we knew she had Alzheimer's. There was no question. All the signs were there.
Well, and I think when we talk about that, there's become more observation around neuronal differences or neuronal deficiencies or Alzheimer's or the whole gamut that can happen in that arena is that people are starting to look at their lifestyle. And I think that I've heard you before many times, and when you just said, we don't know what percentage of every of her activity that she was doing that played factor, but you know, when it comes to having a healthy brain, that those percentages line up as well. So if it's like, if you're not exercising, you don't have to go to the gym every day, but you're doing something. Mm-hmm. If you're eating a lot of packaged foods, you know that they're packaged with preservatives.
Mm-hmm.
Decrease your packaging or what you're eating out of a package by half. It's not difficult to do. It's not difficult to do. Or making different choices when you're at a restaurant. So I've just come off the road. I travel for work and people say to me all the time, oh my gosh, it must be so difficult with the way you eat because I have certain allergies. And I said, absolutely never. Like absolutely never. Now I always have, you know, sugar-free granola bars where I go because if I need to shove something in my face in a plane, that's fine. But you know, you take responsibility for it. But I've never been at a restaurant that I couldn't put a meal together with the sides. Like I'll have roasted potatoes and I'll have these vegetables and I'll have this or whatever I'm eating. You can put it together. And everybody has been very accommodating. In every country I've gone to, I'm like, please don't put, you know, butter there. You know, use oil instead or whatever. So I think people's mindset has to change because I know when I travel with people, they're like, yeah, well, I'm just traveling. I'm like, you're traveling for 2 weeks. You know what I mean? So you don't have to move off an unhealthy diet. And I think people do that. And you hear people, I don't want to go on a cruise because I come back 10 pounds or 8 pounds or 5 pounds more because there's food everywhere. And I'm like, well, you don't have to eat it. Like, you don't have to go and eat it. So I think that it does come down to those small choices over a continued manner of time that starts to bank the odds in your favor, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And by the way, why I talk about that a lot, I'm involved with a health and wellness team here in my Chamber of Commerce, and I talk about it a lot because even though I'm not a practitioner, we have to talk about self-care and preventive care. So I call myself wellness tangential.
Ooh, what is that? Did you say?
Wellness tangential.
Oh, tangential. Yeah. Never heard of that. Does that mean like you have other people that you like? What is I don't know. I've never heard
I
that
work
word.
With them.
Tangential.
Yeah, I work with them. I'm on the periphery of the healthcare practitioners, but I do talk about it a lot so that people will take care of not just their loved one, but themselves.
Wow. That there you go. I learned a new word today. I have learned a new word today. Along those veins, you talked about your mom. Is there a situation either with a family that you've mediated with or someone who was starting to show signs that you were able to kind of come in? Can you give an example? Because I think one of the things that happens, particularly in your industry, is that when you are that child or that niece or that caregiver or whatever, I think you get succumbed a little bit with this is only happening to you. You might know statistically that's not going to be accurate, but it is an isolated experience, right? You're going to work with worries of this other person. Is there a story, a success story? Hey, this kind of made a different story that you can share with us?
Sure. And it's actually one that's almost a combination of caregiving, consulting, and elder mediation.
Okay.
And it's a good example that you can't do it alone. You can't do it all at once. You do it, it. You need to build a support team, need to seek out help, and too many people try to do it. And that's just a recipe for burnout, getting sick, or worse. Because many caregivers predecease the person they're caring for, which is not only, yes, especially once you get over 70 years old with dementia, it's like about two-thirds predecease because they're not taking care of their own health. They're stressed out, they're exhausted, they're isolated, which is really sad. But it's preventable. Because if they do go to a support group, they do go yoga and meditation, go to their own doctor, have somebody watch their loved one or set up a respite or have a caregiver come in to watch them, then you can at least take care of your own health. Hey, what about just getting your hair cut, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You got to do those things.
Yeah.
Go to the dentist, right? So what I had was a case where a woman is originally from here in Portland, Oregon. But she had been living in the UK, in London, for 30 years. Her mom and her stepfather were living in one of these big buy-in, beautiful building care communities. They had all levels, but it was mostly independent living. And fortunately, the daughter got my name from the Alzheimer's Association. Of course, it's called Alzheimer's Society elsewhere. And the big problem is that the mom was being neglected, not only by the care community. They stuck her into memory care, which she had no business being in at that point. She was being neglected by the step family, by even her own doctor. A simple thing like she needed B12 shots, he didn't believe in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she was manifesting like she had some cognitive issues. I mean, more severe than she should be at that time. So she gets a hold of me. We put together a care conference and a mediation of sorts with the care community, Adult Protective Services, which was called by the care community. They're the ones that were neglectful, crazy. Elder law attorney, home care, a house call geriatrician. I think I'm missing one other element, as well as the family. And get everybody together, keep them talking, and come to an agreement that got the mom back on track. She got her B12 shots from the house call physician. Mom gets back out of there, back up to independent living with her husband. Things progressed over time. I've been actually working with his daughter for close to 2 years now. Fortunately, there have been falls. There have been hip fractures. There has been progression of the mom's dementia, but I've continued to support her. But we got that team together to take care of the mom so that she's, God knows where she would have been if she had been stuck in that memory care, that care community. And imagine the stress of the daughter in UK making all these trips, but having a team to keep her eyes and ears on her mom so she didn't have to make even more trips and more phone calls and Zoom calls. So
that's a That's a wonderful story that you're sharing because, well, first of all, it's not a story, it's real, a life story, because I think it does take a team. You know, they always say, you know, when you have a new baby, you know, it's a village, you know, a village raises children. But also I think on when you start to become at a place where you're not as capable, right? So children are not as capable. And if you get to that place where you're not as capable for whatever reason, you know, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, how wonderful it is to have a team or someone who's facilitating a team to see things that you don't see. I mean, that's kind of how it works, right? And with this world being so global and parents and children living and relatives living in different, or, you know, people that didn't have children and mm-hmm. they're relying on other family members, just how vast the world is. And we're not living on the same street anymore. We're not necessarily in the same community and we don't all go to the same school, right? So that we can see the importance of that.
And long distance caregiving isn't necessarily easy or harder than in the same town. It's just a different emphasis. And mm-hmm. I did both.
Mm-hmm.
Making those cross-country trips and travel and long and taking care of affairs from a distance, that I did it here on in person.
Yeah.
Right in the same community.
Yeah.
And no matter what, it's still hard. It's stressful. Had a lot on my plate. And basically, you have to go into triage mode. I'm going to take care of this. That's the most important. Then this, everything else will have to wait.
Yeah.
Like the ER or the battlefield, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Well, look, I love listening to you because not only do I think it's important to put real things on the real table, right? And just talk about things that are happening, but also very solution-based and to give people an inspiration, an idea, and also to have people start having those conversations and having those conversations with themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, I mean, as morbid as my son was experiencing it, like, so, you know, I do my will every couple of years because life changes. And, you know, I'm at the stage where my daughter had a baby and then she had another baby. And, you know, now my son has a business and there's these things that change your life financially and you're having that conversation. And I was sitting with my kids and, you know, I'm like, okay, who's going to take these things and who's going to do this? And my son looks at my daughter, which there's 10 and a half years apart. And he's like, this is a little strange. She goes, oh, just get used to it. You know, this is what she does, right? Because I live in a, you know, I live in a world of having friends and colleagues like you where, you know, you like, hey, this is something that you need to make sure that you take care of and having that conversation. And I remember sitting there having a conversation and it might sound morbid, but you got to talk about these things. And I said, okay, here's the deal.
Yeah,
if I'm in this, if I'm in this condition and you know, the decision needs to be made. I said, I've designated this person. And my daughter's like, why isn't it going to be me? And I said, because you want it to be someone that emotionally could handle if the cure for the disease I had shows up 4 days after this decision. Mm-hmm. You know, those really in-depth conversations. She's like, no, I'm going to do it. You know, I'm like, okay, yeah, I doubt you will. But having those conversations. Yeah. And it's interesting because generationally, I mean, it's not like I might have this conversation with my children, but it sure was not a conversation that my mother was having with us at the age of my daughter's 30 and my son's 20. Like, oh, hey, so if I do, it's, I'm not saying it's new information. It certainly should be talked about as much as possible. But I still think there's a bit of, we don't talk about these things. Because I think I'm the exception to the rule mm-hmm. on that. If my friends are like, really?
Especially some generations, some cultures.
Exactly.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some are more open about it. Some, you know, we don't talk about it. We don't air our laundry in public and blah, blah, so forth. So, yeah.
Do you have any advice as we wrap up for someone who is conscious, who, you know, is conscious of this world and possibility, and they're up against a parent that doesn't want to talk about it, that doesn't want to have a conversation, mm-hmm. that may not say, well, I have a will, I don't know. Like, do you have any advice for someone who's up against the unknowingness?
Mm-hmm. I think we alluded to at the beginning that you're not going to come in and just take over. That's not going to work. There's going to be resistance. I like to use the example that, well, hopefully he won't hear this. My brother was a musician, and the only thing that he played better than the piano was mom.
Right.
Okay. Now, and it's better that he didn't become power of attorney. In my case, I learned to play mom a little bit, but her best interests. For instance, and this is before the hurricane, she used to do her finances. She used to do her taxes. And the taxes were sitting there on the table. They weren't moving.
Mm.
I said, Mom, how would you like it if I come down there and help you with the taxes? She says, oh, that's a great idea. I'm glad I thought about it. It was how I framed it that
Right.
her think she thought about, or who's going to deny or reject help?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the same
Yeah.
thing like Mom, there's something I'd like to work on with you. Can you help me with this? Not say, we're going to do this. And it might be, here's some paperwork. This will help you. I want to know your decisions. I don't want to have to try to read your mind. And that might be the power of attorney. It might be the living will advanced directive, making your wishes known. If my mom had not made her wishes known to me, my job would have been a lot harder, such
Right.
as taking extraordinary measures to,
Yeah.
artificial feeding and tubes and antibiotics. There was a famous case in Florida, and I said, Mom, do you want to end up like Terry Schiavo? Woman end up on a for years in a persistent vegetative state, and everybody's fighting over it. Mom responded very clearly, absolutely not. That was a
Right.
gift. That was a gift.
Yeah. Yeah,
So
absolutely.
have those conversations and talk about it among yourselves and with your aging family members. And it might take somebody who has the best relationship, somebody they listen to. It might take, again, a neutral third party.
Yeah.
Mrs. Smith, this is something you should be taking care of, and your family will really appreciate it. It's a gift to them.
Absolutely. Look, as always, a real pleasure.
Likewise.
And I know that in the show notes are all of your information, but just in case someone is driving right now, not driving, whoo, I almost had to sneeze.
Do what you
Excuse
got to
me.
do.
And we don't edit, so you're going to hear that, people.
That's right.
That's our thing. We don't edit. We are real. So someone may be able to write something down and they want to not wait for the show to come out and what have you. Can you please tell people your website? Or whatever point of interest that you can have them contact you now. And then I have one special question for you.
Okay. So first, my website, and hopefully this is simple enough, CohenCaregivingSupport.com. That's CoHen CaregivingSupport.com. Go ahead.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So we are you are on your way to a desert island and you have one suitcase. I know you're coming to Canada soon. It's not a
This is
desert
a
island,
paradise
but you're
island.
on your way. Yeah, you're on your way to paradise. You and you, just you and you, and you have this suitcase. And in the suitcase, you've got room for one album. What album are you taking that you could not imagine not listening to for the rest of your days?
Ooh, I'm gonna date myself.
We should all date ourselves.
I'm an old Rolling Stones fan.
Hi.
I'll silver hair to prove it. And going back to the late 60s, after they went through their psychedelic period, Beggar's Banquet, which had like Sympathy for the Devil and Jumpin' Jack Flash, those kind of songs. It was great. It was the Stones were back the way we knew them, and we've been hearing those songs ever since.
Oh my goodness, that's
And Let It
amazing.
Bleed would probably be right after
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And of course, they just finished touring. So thank you so much for being on the show today. Audience, thank you for being you, listening, sharing, always asking. If you want to be here, if you have a mission or you have a passion or there's something that's going on with you or you've written a book or anything like that that you want to share that falls in the category of accepting the mission, because it's one thing to accept it, right? So you heard Bill accept the mission and taking care of his mom, and now look how far extended the mission has happened. So if you fit in that category and you want to come spend some time chatting with me, I want to hear from you. Super easy. You know what to do at this point. It's dev@devdrummond.com, or just go to devdrummond.com, little contact page. Tell me to reach out to you. You reach out to me, and we'll make that happen. So until we meet again, be well and stay groovy, and we will see you all next week.